Northend and Kollel, Shir given by Gershon Heppner on Sunday, 13th of November 2011, Tezayin Mar Cheshvan Toshin Ein Beis. And we're on Tehillim chapter Yudches, and we're going from Pasuk Tesvov. Hopefully we'll get this Pasuk down. Vayishlach Chitzov Vayfitzim Uvrokim Rov Vayuhumim. We're in the middle of the section of HaKadosh Baruch Hu punishing the enemies of Klal Yisrael. And we've had all these various natural disasters, the earthquakes and the volcanoes and the flooding and so on. And now we come on to lightning. Vayishlach Chitzov, he sent his arrows via Pitzim and he scattered them. Uvarokim Rov, and he fired or he shot down bolts of lightning, vayuhumim, as he frenzied them. He drove them crazy, drove them into a wild frenzy. Yeah, difficult pasuk. What does it mean? Hashem sends his arrows and he scattered them. Hashem is firing at his enemies, in short. Vayishlach Chitzov, he sent his arrows, vayifitzim, and he scattered them. We're not sure yet what he scattered. Uvarokim Rov, and he fired down, or he shot down, bolts of lightning, vayuhumim, and he frenzied them, or he confused them, or he can also mean he created a tumultuous noise. And again, we're not quite sure what the direct object is there, vayuhumim, he frenzied them, he frenzied whom, or he frenzied what, is not yet clear. Okay, so the first thing to do is to take a look at Rashi and to discover that there is no Rashi at all. Yeah, there's no Rashi on this pasuk whatsoever. The Targum on this pasuk says, V'shadar Mimre Hechgirin Uvardin. Hashem sent down, the Targum learns this word Chitzov, meaning his arrows, as a moshel. Doesn't literally mean arrows, that doesn't surprise us. But what does it mean? The Targum learns for Shadar Memri, he sent his word. Hashem sent his word down, Heich Girin, like arrows. Uvaradin, and like Borod. What's Borod? Hail. Uvarakin Sagiin Yeshag Shagun. And a lot of lightning frenzied them. So the first part of this Targum is to understand this word Mimre, the Shadam Mimre, and I'm not really sure that I don't understand it. We're on Tesvov, which is, I think it's at the top right hand page. So the Targum learns the Shadam Mimre, he sent down his word Heich Girin, like arrows. So the Pasuk says Vayishlach Chitzov, he sent down his arrows, and Targum seems to know, no, he's sending down his word. Which word is this? I don't really know. Some kind of, maybe it's a message of anger against the enemies. I don't know what it is. He's sending down his word against the enemies like arrows. That's how the Targum learns it. Yeah. So, but the last part of the Targum is very, very strange. The Targum translates Uvarokim Rov, which I translated as he shot down bolts of lightning. The Targum learns the word Rov to mean something else. So the Targum translates it as Uvarkin Sagiyim. Now, Varkin is the Aramaic word for Uvarokim, that's easy. But he translates the word Rov as Sagiyim. Sagiyim means many or plenty. So it's a completely different meaning. Rov, like the word, Yeshli Rov, I have a lot, which is what Esav said to Yaakov. Or what comes to the same sort of word as harbe, rov, a lot. So the Targum understands uvrokim rov as many bolts of lightning. Now that's, as far as I can tell,
Revelation at Sinai.
I haven't seen anyone who defines it as being a reference to Har Sinai. Oh, it's there. You almost Hakolos Esabrokim. I think that's the pasuk. That's right. So Rokim means lightning. But the difficulty here is that the Targum understands the word Rov as being a description of the word of Rokim. And what does it mean? It means plenty of lightning. Now the difficulty with that is that the word of rokim is a plural, and the adjective which is going to describe that must match it, and rov is a singular, and the plural of rov is rabim. So surely the pasuk should say uvrokim rabim, many bolts of lightning. But the Targum doesn't seem bothered by that kasha, and the Targum understands the word rov as being an expression of many or plenty. Uvrokim rov. Rashi says nothing, so we don't know. Yeah, uvrokim rov and many bolts of lightning. That's how the Targum learns it. He translates it as uvarkin sagiin. Sagi means a lot or plenty. So now the Targum is the only pirush who understands the word rov in this way. All the other mafreshim learn that the word rov means to shoot down, and it connects beautifully with what we had in yesterday's Sedra, Parshas Vayera, where we had, let's get this in. Yeah, go on, Norman. Like a bit like the word fish. Can be plural and singular, or sheep, plural and singular. Lightning. Yeah, it's true in English, there's no plural word for lightning. Yes, but when we're going to compare this pasuk to the one in Shmuel Beis, right, to the parallel pasuk in Shmuel Beis, and there it's given in the singular, borok. So in Hebrew there is a singular and there is a plural, but in English it's true, it's all the same. Yeah? The most of the mafreshim.
When it says kolos uvrokim, it doesn't mean one single clap of thunder, does it?
No.
Or one single flash of lightning.
No, it doesn't. Okay, but you can see that in Hebrew, the word borok can be used in the singular and in the plural.
Yeah.
So if it's going to be in the plural, then according to the Targum, where the word rov defines or describes the word of rokim, surely that should be a matching plural, and it should be rabim and not rov. I haven't seen this kasha on the Targum anywhere. At any rate, the Targum is the only pirush who learns that the word rov means many. Uvrokim rov, uvarkin sagiin, many bolts of lightning. All the other mafreshim, without exception, the Radak and the Ibn Ezra and others as well, all learn that the word rov, the Mitzvah of Sovereign as well, that the word rov means to fire or to shoot something. And the pasuk that proves it is a pasuk from yesterday's Sedra. It's a pasuk which you find in Bereishis, it's chapter Kaf Aleph, pasuk Kaf, which, as soon as I say it, you'll recognize it straight away. We learnt about Yishmael, Vahi Elokim Es HaNa'ar, and Hashem was with this young lad, i.e. Yishmael, Vayigalini Gerat, Vayeshev Bamidbar, and Vayeshev Bamidbar, he dwelt in the desert, Vayihi Rover Kashos, and he became an archer. Rover, the one who fires, kashos is the bow. So he became an archer. That's how he earned his panosso, shooting animals for a living. So rover is to fire or to shoot.
You know, in modern Hebrew, rover is a gun.
I didn't know that.
A rifle.
I never needed to know that word in powders. Not yet. Yeah. So yeah. Oh, they are so very good. So fire. Like river kashos. Right, so gone there. Rifle, that's it. Oh, right, so are you very Rebecca? So all the other Mefreshim, the Ibn Ezra and the Radak and the Mitzvah of, they all understand this passage quite differently. They all learn by Shlachitzov, he sent his arrows by his feet, same, and he scattered them. Uvarokim Rov, and he fired bolts of lightning. Vayuhumim, and he frenzied them. So, according to the Targum, Rov is an adjective of Uvrokim, and according to all the other Rishonim, Rov is a verb. Yeah? To fire. Oh, so, let's see. Yeah. Now, the Radak, in fact, points out that the word Rov comes from the root Resh Ves Ves. which means to fire, he says. And he quotes another pasuk as well. And it's a pasuk, this is for you, Norman. He quotes a pasuk from Parashas Vayechi, where the pasuk says, in the bracha that Yaakov Avinu gave Yosef, it's in chapter Mem Tes Pasuk Kaf Gimel, the pasuk says, say that again? No.
That's a crouch.
Yeah, it's a crouch. Yeah, that's the Rish Vais Tadi. That's different. The pasuk there says, Vaychi Mem, chapter Mem Tes Pasuk Kaf Gimel, Vayamoruhu Varobu. Yeah? Vayamoruhu Varobu. And they embittered him, and then Varobu. What's it talking about? This is the bracha for Yosef. And it's a reference to the brothers who antagonized Yosef. Vayamoruhu. They made his life bitter. When he was a young boy growing up, they made his life bitter. Varobu. Now, what does that word varobu mean? Discomforted. Yeah, it's similar sort of lines. The Radak on that pasuk in Bereshis, in Vayechi, that the Radak learns it's an expression of firing an arrow. It's as though they fired arrows at Yosef with their constant antagonistic attitude towards him. That's how the Radak learns. Rashi on that pasuk learns that the word varobu comes from a different word, riv, resh yud veis, which means an argument. They quarrelled. Vayamoruhu, they embittered him. Varobu, and they quarrelled. But the Radak is lishitoso. The Radak learns it's the same word both here, uvarokim rov, and there, vayamoruhu varobu, as being an expression of firing an arrow. And he points out that the root is resh veis veis, to fire something, resh veis veis. And since the root has a double veis in it, and the word varobu loses one of those vases, that explains why there's a dogish in the remaining one, varobu, to make up for the missing vase. So based on that, you'll say to me, how can that be? Because in our pasuk of Rokim Rov, there's no dogish. It's not of Rokim Rob with a base. It's of Rokim Rov with a vase. Why isn't there a dogish in that one? If there's a missing vase, surely there should be a dogish in our word as well. And the answer to that is most likely that when that a dogish in the last letter is usually not there. Yet even if the last letter should take a dogish, it's usually not there. It's unusual to have a dogish in the last letter. There's not a dogish, that's a mapike. A hey is a letter which doesn't take a dogish. It looks the same, of course, a dot. Looks the same, but it's not a dogish, it's a mapike. Oh. Yeah? Oh, yeah. Different thing. Mapike is when a word finishes with a hey, and there's a dot in the hey, and there's usually a komots in the second last letter, and it refers to something which is feminine and singular, and it's often a direct object. So take a word like lekocha, is short for lokach osa, he took her. So lekocha, he took her, it's feminine and it's singular. Yeah? Okay, that's a mapike, it's something quite different. But normally, according to the Radak knows that the root of the word is resh veis veis. Therefore, it's what we call in grammar, it's called an ayin-ayin verb. The ayin letter is used to describe the second root letter, because all roots are compared to pei, ayin, lamed. Okay? Roots, the primary example root is pei, ayin, and lamed, which means to do, which is why it's a root of a verb, because it means to do something, pei, ayin, lamed. So the middle root letter is referred to as an ayin, and whenever the second root letter and the third root letter are the same, the Bali Dictor call it an ayin, ayin verb, meaning that the ayin letter, the second letter, appears twice. Ayin, ayin. Yeah? So according to the Radak, the root is resh veis veis, which means to fire an arrow or to fire something. Yeah? Therefore, that would be classified as an ayin, ayin verb, i.e. where the second root letter is the same as the third root letter. Okay? And what a very common pattern with ayin, ayin verbs is that one of those two disappear. And that's exactly what fits in with what's going on in that pasuk in Vayechi, Vayamoruhu, Varobu. There's only one vase in the word. And since one of them has disappeared, it's replaced by a dogish in the remaining one. Which is why that word there, Vayamoruhu, Varobu, has got a base and not a vase, because the vase takes a dogish and becomes a base. That leaves you with the kasha, well, why isn't there, what about our word, which is Rov, Resh, Vase, If the root is resh, vase, vase, and again we'd call that an ayin verb, and again one of them has gone missing, surely it should be a dogish in the remaining one. Why isn't it there? And the answer to that, I heard many years ago from Kleinfirstone, who taught me loads and loads of diktuk and tanach. He said that because it's the last letter of the word, even if there's a good reason to put a dogish in the last letter of the word, it often is not there. Okay? That though, still leaves one kasha on the pasuk from Vayera, Vayhi Roveh Kashos. If the root is the word Roveh looks as though the root is Resh Resh Hey. Yes, according to the Radak, it's Resh Resh Face. And if it is Resh Resh Face, then surely the remaining vase in Roveh should take a dogish and should become Roveh. So, a bit of a kasha. Okay, a kasha. That's how the Radak learns. And the Radak also goes on to say that one of these chitzim and uvarokim in our pasuk, he sends his arrows and his lightning. What is it? It's obviously a moshel for something, and the Radak learns it's a moshel for gezeros koshes, the harsh decrees against the enemies of Klal Yisrael. Gezeros koshes. That's how the Radak learns it. Let's just get this. Yeah. Good. Okay. The Ibn Ezra points out something which should be fairly obvious to us now, and namely that the pasuk comes in two halves, and the second half echoes the first half. He sent his arrows and he scattered them, and then that message is echoed uvrokim rov vayuhumim, and he shot lightning bolts and frenzied them. So really, the second half of Rokim Rav Ayahumim really is a parallel to Vayishlachitz of Vayifitzim. And the pasuk comes in two halves, and the second half is an echo of the first half. That's how the Ibn Ezra learns it. And the Ibn Ezra also says it's an expression of firing an arrow, and he also says it comes from the expression Resh Resh Vase, to fire an arrow, and then he proves it, or he illustrates it with a different example, a similar word, which word is, he quotes a pasuk in Vayigash, yes, in Vayigash, and it's Vayigash chapter Mem Zayin pasuk Yud Ches, where the people of Egypt are starving hungry as the famine takes its toll on the country, and they come to Yosef for food, and he's selling, and they give him their animals, and he sells them off, and eventually they give him his land, they give him their land. With that he gives them food in exchange. Now the pasuk says in Vayigash chapter Mem Zayin pasuk Yud Ches, here it is. Vayomru lo, the people said to Yosef, lo nechachid mi adoni, we will not withhold from my master. We're not going to withhold any information from you. And what is that information? Ki im tam hakesef, that our money is exhausted. Or mikne abehema, and our animals, el adoni, to our master. We've run out of money, we've run out of animals. What else can we give you? Because of course Yosef took their money and gave them food, then Yosef took the animals and gave them food. Mm-hmm. And now they come to say, we're still starving for food, but we've got no money left and we have no animals left. And eventually they gave away their land. Now, the phrase here, ki im tam hakesef. Now, that word tam is very similar to our word rov. And why is it similar? Because it's two out of the three letters of the root. And the root of tam is tof mem mem. Again, with a doubled letter. Tof mem mem. Where the second letter of the root, mem, is the same as the third letter of the root, mem.
Okay.
Tomim is similar words, which means to be perfect, to be completely finished off, i.e. well-rounded and perfect. Mm-hmm. Tomim is a very similar word, yeah. But here it means to be finished, tam, to be finished. And it comes from the root tof mem mem. So it's very similar to our word rov, which is from resh vase vase. It's the same pattern, which we call an ayin pattern, where the second and third letter of the roots are the same, and one of those two letters has gone missing. So the Ibn Ezra illustrates our posuk with the word rov, of Rokim Rov, he fired arrows, or he fired lightning. He compares it to that word tam, because it's a very similar word. Namely, it's the first letter of the root, in our case the Reish, and in that word Tam it's the Tof, together with one of the other two. In the case of Tam it's a Mem, and it's only one of the two Mems, and in our word Rov it's a Vase, and it's one of the two Vases. So that's how the Ibn Ezra illustrates it. Good. Okay. Let's move on. Oh. In the Sefer Eretz HaChaim, the Sefer Eretz HaChaim, written by the grandson of, I think, of the Sma, he, in his Pirush on Tehillim, he says something which I don't fully understand. He says that the phrase Vayishlach Chitzov, Hashem sends down his arrows against whom? Against Baalei Lashon Hara, against people who speak Lashon Hara. Very specific. Against those who speak Lashon Hara. And the second half of Rokim Rov, he fires bolts of lightning, that's Neged, against whom is that? Moshav Leitzim. Layabouts. Moshav Leitzim. People who waste the time, general layabouts, who don't do much with their time. And in the Pirush there, he explains there, it's not in the Pirush, I must have seen this somewhere else. What's the connection to Vayishlach Chitzov? He says that specifically refers to Hashem firing arrows at people who speak Lashon Hara. Why dafka people who speak Lashon Hara? And the answer is because there's a pasuk elsewhere in Tehillim where people who speak Lashon Hara, or Lashon Hara per se, is compared to firing arrows. Let's get the pasuk. Here it is. Yeah, it's a pasuk, it's in Tehillim, it's chapter Kuf Kaf, and it's pasuk Dalet, and you'll recognize it because it's in the Sham Alice. Just going back to the previous pasuk, may yitin lecha or may yosif lach loshen remia. What benefit will you have, or what will be added to you, loshen remia, when you speak with guile, or you speak with cunning, or you speak wrongly? And then the next pasuk says, chitse giber shenunim. The arrows of the mighty man are sharpened. And there we see, so the Mefarshim explained that the tongue is compared to chitzim. The human tongue is compared to arrows. Why? Because a person can speak Lashon Hara and damage from a distance. A person can do a lot of damage from a distance. You can speak Lashon Hara, you can speak Lashon Hara in Australia about someone living in England and affect them in India. You know, because that's the effect of speech. Yeah. So the human tongue is compared to chitzim. Therefore, based on that, the Sefer Eretz HaChaim says that the pasuk by Shlach Chitzov, Hashem sends his arrows by feet same and scatters them against whom? Against the people who use their tongues like arrows. I.e. people who speak Lashon Hara. That's how the Sefer Eretz HaChaim understands it. There's a gorgeous line from the old Fawlty Towers where Basil Fawlty refers to Sybil and he says, with her tongue she can kill a man at 100 paces or something like that. she can kill a man at 100 paces with a blow from her tongue. It's something like that. It's cleverly worded. Alright, so there we are. So the tongue is compared to chitzim. Yeah? Yeah. Oh, good. Now, Rabbi Yosef Tzvi Dushinsky, in his Sefer on Tehillim, from the Dushinsky Rav, the Dushinsky Rebbe is a Hasidish Rebbe, and I have a very close connection with Rabbi Yosef Tzvi Dushinsky, which I knew about and forgot until Yaakov Chaim reminded me about it earlier last week, namely that Rabbi Yosef Tzvi Dushinsky wrote a Haskoma to the Sefer written by my great-grandfather. So my great-grandfather, Rabbi Shah Nosson Freilich, Sefer Sadi Livracha, he wrote a Sefer called Shari Dura. Well, Shari Dura is written by Rishon, and he wrote a Pirush on it called the Imre Vino. And he wrote a Pirush on that Sefer, and he got a Haskama for it from Rabbi Yosef Tzvi Dushinsky. Oh, Rabbi Yosef Tzvi Dushinsky says as follows. The word Rav in our Pasuk of Rokim Rav is defined in the Masorah. The Masorah quotes three Pesukim, all with the same word Rav, and all appearing in Tehillim. Now the word Rav actually appears quite a few times in Tehillim. I looked it up in the Concordance. The word Rav appears many times in Tehillim, but the Masorah links three of them together. Doesn't explain what the connection is, but three times this word Rav is quoted by the Masorah, and the words are all linked. What are these three times? Well, here's, of course, one of them, Uvrokim Ravai Humim. The second one, or another one, is in Tehillim, and it's chapter Mem Posuk Yud, where the Posuk says, Bisarati Tzedek B'Kohol Rav. I informed the news of righteousness in a great gathering. Bisarati Tzedek B'Kohol Rav. There's the link word, Rav. What is the Pasuk talking about? It's talking about speaking in Torah, teaching Torah to a massed crowd. That's what it means. Bisarati Tzedek. I darshaned, I gave a drasha, B'Kohol Rav, in amongst a great multitude of people. That's one. And the other one is in Tehillim, chapter Kuf Yud Tes, Pasuk Kuf Samachay. Yeah, you wait till we get to Kuf Yud Tes. Look how many psukim there are in that chapter. Yeah? So Tehillim chapter Kuf Yud Tes, Kuf Samachay, where the Pasuk says, Shalom, oh yeah, well known to us. Shalom Rav Lo Ave Sarasecha. Much peace to those who love your Torah. So we have three times this word Rav, which are all linked together. But what is the connection between them? Says Rav Yosef Tzvi Dushinsky, they are all can be understood to be giving when a person has to give musa to someone else. Someone needs to get a telling off. Now, how do you give a telling off to someone? You know, a Rav or someone has to give musa to his congregation. How should it be done? So he says there are three distinct ways of doing it, corresponding to three different types of people. It all depends on the person who needs the musa. What kind of person is he? If he's a very lowly person, a person who's full of avarice and who doesn't do much good in his life, he needs a very short, sharp, he needs a good, sharp telling off. He needs a proper rebuke. If he's someone who's generally good but has occasional lapses, so you speak to him a little bit more gently, a little bit more pleasantly, maybe introduce him to the beauty of Torah and speak to him with pleasant words. If he's a tzaddik, but he's simply had a minor aberration, which is out of character. So a person like that, he certainly doesn't need any sharp words. He doesn't need to be told things in such a pleasant, with pleasant words. He needs even less than that. Just a little bracha or a tiny word to him will be enough. Will do the trick to give him musa. You can give him musa very, very gently, and he'll be fine with that because that's all he needs. Right? So all depends on the needs. So he says, these three pasukim, all with the word Rav in it, all correspond to that. So he says as follows. The our pasuk, Uvrokim Rav Vayahumim, is firing down bolts of lightning. That's the real tough. That's the tough stuff. That's when you've got to give musa to someone who's a rasha, someone who's not good, and he really needs a very sharp turning off. Someone in between, someone who's not bad and is not totally good, a beinoni, someone who's an in between. For him, what you should do is, you know what you should do? Collect them all together, collect these people together in one great big congregation, and teach them the words of the Torah, and teach them how to lead a straight and narrow life. And that's Bisarati Tzedek B'Kohol Rav. That's the Pasuk in Tehillim chapter Mem Pasuk Yud. Bisarati Tzedek B'Kohol Rav. I gave a drasha B'Kohol Rav to a large number of people. And the other one, of Shalom Rav L'Ave Sarasecha, from Tehillim chapter Kuf Yud Tes, Shalom Rav L'Ave Sarasecha, that's the tzaddikim who all they need is something very, very gentle indeed. Just a small, even a bracha, Shalom Rav L'Ave Sarasecha, there should be a lot of peace to those who love your Torah. That's enough. That should be enough for those tzaddikim. So that's how Rabbi Yossi Dushinsky links these three pesukim, all in Tehillim and all with the word Rav in it. Good.
So, when did he live?
Rav Yossi Dushinsky, when did he live? I can tell you that he wrote the Haskama for my great grandfather Sefer in the year 1930. Mm. And he was living in a place called Chust. Because that's how the letter that he wrote to my great grandfather to give a Haskama, he signs it as being in Chust and he dates it as being 1930. The Sefer was published in 1939 or even 1940 in Hungary. In Hungary, in that time was okay. In 1944, my great-grandfather was taken and he was killed in Auschwitz. And My mother has a first cousin living in Eretz Yisrael. He remembers arriving in Auschwitz with his grandfather, my great-grandfather, and he tells the story. The story's been called into question, but he tells the story that when they arrived in Auschwitz and they got off the trains in Auschwitz, my great-grandfather turned to his grandson, whose name is Kalman Brown, and he calls himself Kalman Bar-On to Israelified it, and said to him, "I left my tefillin on the train. Could you go back on the train and get my tefillin?" And he did, apparently. It's not clear whether he did or he didn't. But he went back. This is the story. He went back on the train to collect the tefillin. Of course, he was killed straight away. He was killed on Ches Tammuz, 1944. Remember, when we got married on Ches Tammuz. And two great uncles, Jeffrey Freilich's father and Reb David Freilich, that's Rabbi Joe Freilich's father, they couldn't come to the house in the evening because they had yahrzeit. That was Ches Tammuz was the yahrzeit for their father. So okay, so that's our wedding anniversary is on his yahrzeit. Yeah.
So the children decided to leave hungry, but
the children managed to get out. Yes, the children
but he didn't.
Was still there. Yeah, he was still there, and he was taken. And a phenomenal Talmud Chacham. He had two wives. His first wife died very young, and he remarried. And my mother's father was from the first marriage, and Jeffrey's father, Reb Meir Freilich, was from the second marriage. Second marriage, yes. So I'm descended from the first marriage, and Jeffrey's father's from the second marriage. Yeah. So, yeah.
I think so. This thing about the different levels of people, and the modern day Rabbonim, probably you wouldn't subscribe to this anymore. That basically the bigger the Russia, the more you whack them.
Yeah.
I don't think modern Rabbonim. I think that in the current era, people feel that people who are further away, they are much more sensitive and they need careful handling.
The difference between Rishonim and people who are ignorant from
Yiddishkeit,
who just don't know,
Anyway, the good news is I'm not a Rov and never will be, and won't have to face that challenge. And look, at different times, different eras, Rav has to judge himself how best to do it.
The times are different because in those days, a person who erred was in disgrace. Most people were law-abiding, Jewish law-abiding, mm-hmm. And a person who erred was looked upon with disgust with people.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, it was the majority who were observant, and those who weren't were called into question. And therefore, they used to give them what for.
Mm.
But nowadays, of course, you've got so many people who don't know.
Mm.
That you could cover them very, very, very gently.
Mm.
Yeah. And that's a big difference.
Let me quote from the Sefer, from the Yalkut HaMochiri. This is a Sefer which I inherited. Mrs. Cooper gave it to me from Rabbi Cooper's library. And when she was trying to clear down the Sfarim, and I took the Sefer because it's on Tehillim. Yalkut HaMochiri brings down, and I don't fully understand this, but he says, Al Posuk, Vayishlach Chitzo Vayifitzim, Evrokim Rav Vayihumim, I read it out, Shtayim, twice. These attacks from HaKadosh Baruch Hu happened twice. When Rab Simon b'shem Rab Abba Bar Kana Omar Achas l'sha'avar, one in the past Shana asal Faro, that was done to Paro. We've learnt this earlier when Paro was riding to the Yamsuf, so Hashem sent down the hailstones. Remember, we had the borods and then hailstones. So it seems one was done to Paro, and probably at that time of Kriyas Yamsuf, the Achas Le'osid, and the other one is for the future, Le'osid Lovo, in the future. When? Le'mulchemes Gog and Magog. So the final showdown of these two big enemies of Klal Yisrael, Gog and Magog, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu will defeat them both and then bring Klal Yisrael to prominence. So this idea of raining down the arrows and the barakim is one for Paro and one for Gog and Magog. Yeah. Gog and Magog, by the way, is the Haftarah for first day Sukkot and Shabbat Chanukah Sukkot.
Hmm. In the Rosh Hashanah davening, it refers to the Hashem will send an arrow, it refers to Hashem will send an arrow and lightning. This thing about, I think it's in the Shofrot section of the Musaf.
Is it referring to what Norm was saying about Matan Torah? The Kolos of Rakim Aleihem who.
No, this is in the verses. It's in the verses that we say in the Lachash and in the silence.
Yeah, I remember. Okay.
Yeah.
I would have to look up. Yeah. All right. I'll carry on. When you find it, let me know. Yeah.
Okay.
Let's come on. Let's go through.
This is from the Nevi'im.
Okay. Alright. Let's compare our Pasuk now to the parallel Pasuk in Shmuel Beis. So we've got a bookmark there. So you'll have to sort of do a bit of turning to compare the two. So in Shmuel Beis, chapter Kaf Beis, where you got the bookmark there, because we compare it with the parallel Pasuk. In Shmuel Beis, chapter Kaf Beis, and it's Pasuk Tesvov, Vaishlach Chitzim Vayefitzim. Have you got that? Tesvov, here, Vaishlach. Yeah, it's on the right hand page, halfway down, it's the last word in the line. Vaishlach Chitzim Vayefitzim, and he sent arrows and scattered them. Borok, there's the singular word, Norman, Borok, lightning. Now that last word is pronounced via your home, and he frenzied, or and he caused chaos. So
the translation in Kufman Dalit is and routed them.
Yeah, okay, routed them, got them out. I've seen loads of translations of this, right? I saw one, I think, which said confused them. Thank you. We're coming to that Pasuk. Yeah, brilliant. Norman, keep it, you'll need it. You've been mechavin to the Ibn Ezra. In spotting the connection is the Ibn Ezra.
Oh.
Alright. Yeah. Okay. You found it there?
Yeah.
Come on, let's hear
it. It's actually from Tehillim. Venemar.
Where's it from? What number is it?
Tehillim
chapter Kaf Zayin, possibly Yud Gimel. There we are. Something to look out for in about 100 years from now when we get there.
Yeah,
very close. Yeah, Borok and Chait. Got them both. Yeah, Shkach. So let's come back to, comparing our Pasuk to the one in Shmuel Beis. So in Shmuel Beis, what have we got? Vayishlach chitzim vayefitzim. He sent arrows. Our Pasuk's got chitzov, his arrows, while the Pasuk in Shmuel Beis has got chitzim, arrows in the plural. Vayefitzim is the same, he scattered them. Our Pasuk has got uvarokim rov, and he fired bolts of lightning. While the Pasuk in Shmuel has just got the word Borok, lightning, in the singular, and without the verb, Rov. And then the last word, Vayohum, is a accretive. There in Shmuel Beis, it's accretive. So it's spelt the same, Rov Yud Hei Mem, final mem, which in our Pasuk reads Vayohumem, and there is a accretive, so although it's written like Vayohumem, it's pronounced Vayohum. So it's actually quite different. Many differences between these two psukim. The Radak there in Shmuel Beis says that there's no big deal of a difference between Vayohom and Vayohumim, and his Loshen is Ein B'neiam Ela HaKinui. I don't fully understand it. He's reducing the impact of the difference between Vayohumim and Vayohom. Not such a big difference. The Mahari Kra there in Shmuel Beis says, what are these chitzim? He says, it's fire. What are these barokim? Again, fire. I don't really understand that, but he says it's a reference on HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates fire. Maybe volcanoes or something like that. I'm not sure. The Yalkut Mi'amilis, both in Tehillim and in Shmuel Beis, points out that the punishments that HaKadosh Baruch Hu brings down to earth are always with Rachmonus. They're with Rachamim. And he says that, yeah, that first, and I don't fully understand this, but I've got the gist of it. Vayishlach Chitzav Ayfit, same. He sends down his arrows and scatters them. Whom is he scattering? The enemy. So he learns Vayifit, same, refers to scattering of the enemies. Because the enemies are now scattered, therefore the Barakim, the lightning, won't do as much damage as it would have done had he not first scattered them. So he fires down arrows, people scatter to all areas, and possibly even go indoors for protection, and therefore when Hashem then later on sends down the Barakim, the lightning, that doesn't do as much damage anymore. So it's a punishment, but it's a punishment with Rachmonus. That's how the Yalkut Mi'amilis points out.
So in reality, what does it mean? Because now we're talking about actual lightning falling.
Yeah. Well,
so what are we talking about then, the arrows? What's really happening there?
Well, the Razak learned it was Gezeiros Koshos, evil decrees. The Marikra learned it's fire. And I think the Malbim, if I understood the Malbim correctly, he learns it's referring to rain. Rain, i.e. some kind of flooding.
It's got to be something physical
to cause
people to scatter.
That's right, yeah. Coming back to our word, the word in Shmuel Beis, the last word there, which is pronounced by your home, to Greek say by your home. So the Yalkut Mi'amilis likens it to the pasuk. Oh, another one for you, Norman. Parshas B'Shalach, where the pasuk says it's in chapter Yudalad, pasuk Kaf Dalad, Vayohom Es Machane Mitzrayim. Yeah, and he confused or bewildered or frenzied the camp of Egypt. So Vayohom there in B'Shalach, Vayohom, is almost the same word as the word in Shmuel Beis, Vayohom. It's almost the same word. That's how the Yalkut Mi'amilis puts it.
It could be sounds to confuse.
Yes, and we're coming on to it. Yes. Let's deal with it now. The Masad Rav Kook Pirush on Tehillim, he goes through the whole body, he gives a number of variant possibilities on the pasuk. He says that let's go back to Vayishlach Chitzov, taking the pasuk as it reads in Tehillim. Vayishlach Chitzov, he sends his arrows by feet same, and he scatters them. So the Masad Rav Kook says, scatters whom? Whom is he scattering? So he says there are two possibilities. It can either refer to scattering the enemies, or it could refer to scattering the arrows. Firing arrows in all different directions. And then, Uvrokim Rav, he fires lightning, Vayuhumim. He says, what does Vayuhumim mean? He frenzied them. So he said, well, two possibilities again. It could either refer to the enemies, putting the enemies into a frenzy, or it could refer to firing the bolts of lightning with accompanying noises. Yeah? And Vayuhumim means he sends off the lightning with an enormous bang.
Well, you see, because when the lightning strikes, it's in one place, but the sound is widespread, so you can hear a roar of thunder and not be aware of lightning.
Yeah. So I see, you might not see the lightning where you are.
But the thunder is much more frightening than the lightning.
Yeah.
Because you can be indoors and not see the lightning. A blind man won't see the lightning, but the thunder you'll hear.
Yeah.
And it reaches everyone's ears.
Yeah.
So it has a much more panicking effect when you hear the roar of thunder.
Lightning is like a silent thing. If it wasn't for the thunder, only one or two people would know about the lightning in terms of actually their house would be Chas V'Shalom destroyed or something.
You can gaze at it.
Yeah.
But the thunder,
it
can be really frightening right above you.
Yeah.
Still with Masad Rav Kook, Pirush on Tehillim, he gives a difference, comparing the two psukim in Shmuel Beis and the one in Tehillim. He says, why in Shmuel Beis is it Borok in the singular, and in Tehillim it's Uvarokim in the plural? He says very simply, the pasuk in Shmuel Beis, Borok in the singular, is a collective noun, and that's very similar to what you were saying before, Norman, about it being a singular word. It's because it's a collective noun. It's put into the singular, but of course it refers to many, many bolts of lightning. That's how the Mosad Rav Kook learns. The Abarbanel disagrees, and the Abarbanel learns a number of differences between our two psukim. Yeah, he says that our pasuk in Tehillim says kitzav vayishlach kitzav, his arrows, while the pasuk in Shmuel Beis says kitzim vayishlach kitzim, arrows. Says the Abarbanel, what's the difference between them? So the Abarbanel, in his whole essay on his whole pirush on the chapter in Tehillim, he shows how Tehillim is the psukim in Tehillim explain and enhance the psukim in Shmuel Beis. And chitzim are arrows, that's in Shmuel Beis, but chitzov, his arrows. This is not any ordinary punishment, this is a punishment from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Chitzov, it's his, capital H, right? His arrows, and he says, therefore, it's very special types of punishments, the punishments HaKadosh Baruch Hu is meted out against Rishoyim. In particular, he refers to it to the Avnei Borod, hailstones, and the Avnei El Gobish, which are some kind of rocks that were hurled down, which we mentioned last week, on the enemies of Yehoshua. Yeah, they remember that when we mentioned that? The enemies of Yehoshua, the Avnei El Gobish. What about Uvrokim Rov? Our Pasuk in Tehillim has got Uvrokim Rov, Pasuk in Shmuel Beis has got Borok. So we already learnt how the Mosad Rav Kook learns that Borok is simply a collective noun. Now, Ramner learns differently. He says, no, Borok is singular, and it's referring to one specific occasion. What that occasion was, I'm not sure, probably Paro, HaKadosh Baruch Hu punishing Paro. Whereas in our Pasuk in Tehillim, Uvrokim Rov is in the plural, because it refers to numerous occasions where HaKadosh Baruch Hu saved Klal Yisrael and saved David HaMelech over the years. So the one in Shmuel Beis is one particular occasion, while the one in the singular, while the one in Tehillim is in the plural, because it refers to many different occasions. Yeah. Good. The Das Sofrim Sefer, he says, very similar actually, very similar to the Abarbanel. Namely, Chitzov, the arrows Daka from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the Verokim are many different occasions of HaKadosh Baruch Hu helping out Klal Yisrael. Yeah. Let's go now to Rav Shimon Shem Fal Hirsch says something which I don't fully understand. Rav Shimon Shem Fal Hirsch says, excuse me, I read this out. He translates it in his translation on our Pasuk in Tehillim. He translates by Yehumim, Hashem sending out these bolts of lightning. It seemed as if he sent it without a plan. Vayohumim is the lotion of mohumo, which means chaos. And he says, from the appearance, you might think that HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent down his lightning bolts without any specific plan. And of course, nothing could be further from the truth. Everything is very carefully aimed and directed, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is directing his lightning bolts very specifically. But he learns vayohumim is related to the word mohumo, meaning chaos, and it looks as though it's a chaotic thing, but in fact it isn't. That's how Shem Shemal Hirsch puts it. And let's finish with one more thing from the Mosad Rav Kook. Let's come to what you were saying, Norman. The Mosad Rav Kook Sefer connects our Pasuk to another Pasuk in Tehillim. It's in Tehillim, chapter Kuf Mem Dalad. Pasuk, 1 second. Kuf Mem Dalad, Pasuk Vov. And this is very familiar to us because what we say on Mitzvah Shabbos. Kuf Mem Dalad, Pasuk Vov. Barok Borok Husafit Zain. Fire your lightning and scatter them. Shalach chitzecha, send your arrows, usuhumim, and frenzy them. Mm-hmm. In other words, punish the enemies. Punish our enemies. It's a very similar pasuk. Barok Baruch Hussefit saying, fire the Borok, the lightning, and scatter them. Shalach yitzecho, fire the arrows, usuhumim, and frenzy them. It's almost the same pasuk. The Ibn Ezra on that pasuk links it to our pasuk and says that the two pasukim sort of echo each other. What I and Mosad Rav Kook points it out on our pasuk. What I don't fully understand is why this sequence has changed. In our pasuk, the word vayishlach goes with chitzim. Yeah, that stays the same. We've got vayishlach chitzov, and the pasuk in Tehillim chapter of Mem Dalet gives shalach chitzecha. That's fine. Of rokim rov, vayuhumim. In our pasuk, yeah, but the difference is that in our pasuk, first we have the mention of the chitzim, the arrows, and then we have mention of the barokim, the thunderbolts. Whereas the other pasuk in Tehillim chapter Kufim Dalet, it's the other way around. It's barok, barok comes first. First, send down the barok, the lightning, and then shalach yitzecha, and then send your arrows. So the two have swapped over positions. So why that is, I couldn't tell you. I don't know. We'll finish off with a piece of Al-Sheikh. The Al-Sheikh says that, and I mentioned this Al-Sheikh last week very briefly, but in fact it's a bit more detailed now. The Al-Sheikh on our pasuk explains that what is David referring to when he speaks about Hashem sending down these lightning bolts and the chitzim? What does it refer to? Beautiful connection with yesterday's Sedra, Parshas Vayera. It refers to the destruction of Sodom and Amorah. Mm-hmm. Why is David so interested in the destruction of Sodom and Amorah? Because the survivors of Sodom were Lot and his two daughters, mm-hmm. and his wife. Of course, his wife died on the way. Actually, she got back wrongly, and she was killed on that at that moment. David HaMelech's ancestry is from Lot. Why? Because Lot cohabited with his two daughters, and they had children. The first one has a child called Moav, and the second one has a child called Ammon. Now Moav is, of course, the reason why Moav, Mayov from the father. It was considered a very despicable thing to name the son Moav, because it was like an open
admission.
He's got to walk, this child had to walk around with the name Moav for life, as though he's carrying the open admission of incest. No embarrassment, exactly. Moav. And the other one was considered not quite as bad. The first daughter seems to have been worse than the second daughter. Rashi brings that. She instigated the whole thing, the first daughter. And so with her, the expression about her is more mefurish in the pasuk than it is about the second daughter. At any rate, the second daughter called the name Ammon, the Ammon from the notion of Ben Ami, right, the son of my people, which is a similar but not quite a stark reference to the incest. Now, David, of course, comes from Rus Hamoavia. So Rus comes from Moav, David came from Rus. So therefore, David is expressing his thanks to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for sending down the chitzim, vayifitzim, avrokim rov, vayuhumim, and who, being the destruction of Sodom, and the survivors of Sodom, Lot and the two daughters, and David gives personal thanks for that. But there's another one as well. I'll read out this piece of Medrash. Here we are. It's learnt from a pasuk. We've got to get to the pasuk first. The pasuk is yesterday, Sedra, Parshas Vayera. Here it is. And it's chapter Yud Tes, pasuk Tes Vav, where the Malachim are trying to get Lot and the family out of Sodom, and they say, "Kum, get up, kach es ishtecha, take your wife, ve es shetei v'nosecha, and your two daughters." And here's the key word: hanimtzaos. Who are found. Take your two daughters who are found. Now, I discussed this with my son Yishai Noson over Shabbos, and saying, why do we need the word hanimtzaos? What does that word hanimtzaos provide us? Why didn't the two malachim say, take your two daughters? Why the two daughters hanimtzaos who are to be found? Well, of course they're to be found. They're right here in the house. Oh. So Yishai Noson said to me what you're saying, that he originally had four daughters. One was married.
Two were married,
two were single, thank you. One of the married ones was killed. And I think I've got it right. One of them had died already and was killed in Sodom with this, they poured honey over her and then the beast. Two daughters came out. But one of them had already died. She was stung to death by bees.
She was the one. It was Lot's daughter, wasn't it?
Yes. When apparently that was Lot's daughter.
Pardon?
Where did we learn that?
I don't know. It's a medrash, must be a medrash, yeah? That they didn't like the chesed that she was doing or something like that.
She had bread in the pitcher and gave it to a poor man to start with.
Thank you. I didn't know that. Yeah. And so they poured honey over her and
she gave bread to a poor man. She hid it. She hid it in her pitcher when she went to get water, and she gave bread to the this man who was starving.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't like that.
So they poured honey all over her and then released bees on her, and of course the bees went and stung her to death. Yeah? What did you say? I'm the mistake.
I don't know what I said, I forget.
Yeah. So that was one daughter gone. Another daughter apparently chose to stay behind. I think I've got this right. And therefore the two Malachim said to Lot, because they followed the sons in law.
He thought Lot was like a man who jests.
Yeah.
And that was his son-in-law, his wife.
Oh, so therefore one daughter stayed behind, and the other two, the single, I think it must be these two single ones, came out.
Yeah.
Right? And that's Pashup Shat in this word, Hanim Tzoros. Take your two daughters, Hanim Tzoros, who are here to be found. Okay? That's Pashup Shat in the Pasuk. But there's more to it than that. And Rashi on the Pasuk says, something like Umedrash Agodo Yesh. There is a medrash on this. It doesn't say what the medrash is. It just says there is a medrash, and here's the medrash. It's the Medrash Rabbah, and it's on and it's Perek Nun. It's here in the Medrash Rabbah. It's given as Simon Yutes Os Tesvov. So I'll read this out to you. So the Medrash Rabbah says, "Darshan is the pasuk Beth Shenevin Esecha Hanimtzos. Your two daughters who are found." Amar Rav Tuvia bar Rav Yitzchak, Shatei Metzios, two findings, Hanim Tzoros in the plural. So Shatei Metzios, two things which are found, or two people who are found, and who are they? Rus Amoavia, the Na'amo Ha'amonis. Rus descended from Moav, Na'amo descended from Amun. Amar Rav Yitzchak, quoting the Pasuk from Tehillim, chapter Pei Tes, Pasuk Kafalov, it connects to the words Matsosi David Avdi, I found David my servant. Well, that word Matsosi is also Lashon Mitzia. Heichon Matsosi Oso, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, where did I find David? Bisodom, in Sodom. Because David is descended from Rus, and Rus from Moav, and Moav, of course, being the son of Lot's daughter, and therefore the Loshen is, where did I come across, or where did I find David? I found David in Sodom, as a remnant from Sodom, being Lot's daughter. Heichon Matsosi Oso, where did I find him? Bisodom, in Sodom. Veshtevin is Echanim, so it's Omer of Tuvia bar Rabbi Yitzchok, Shetei Metzios. Hanim Tzoros means there are two Metzios, and it's the word Metzios as in a bargain. Two bargains, two amazing things were found. What are they? Rus Hamoavia, the Na'amah Hamonis, and Na'amah from Amun. Now, who is Na'amah Hamonis? She is the mother of Rechavam. Okay?
The other one was the mother of Goliath.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe killed Goliath.
Yes. Hang on. Mention Rus. What was the name of the other daughter in Megillas Rus? Orpah. That's Orpah. Orpah was the mother of Goliath.
Hmm.
Yeah. Orpah. Oh. So, yeah.
Are you going in the car?
Yeah.
Okay, I've got the screen.
Yeah. Okay. All right, yeah. So, Na'amah Amunis. Who is Na'amah Amunis? She is the mother of Rechavam. So Rechavam is the son of Shlomo HaMelech. Okay, after David came Shlomo, and after Shlomo came Rechavam. Now Rechavam apparently ruled for the first 3 years. He held tightly to the tenets and the teachings of his grandfather David HaMelech. But after that, there's a Gemara or a Medrash somewhere I quoted which says that he left from Geit and he no longer stayed along the straight and narrow path of Yiddish Geit. Rabbi Cooper, Zechut Ha'Livracha, described Rechavam, and I would never use these words, but he did, as a weak king. Now, why was he weak? So the story is well known that when he became king, the people turned to him and they said, go easy on us. Your father, Shlomo HaMelech, was a wonderful man, and he built the base of Mikdash, and he built these palaces, a wonderful man, but he taxed us ruthlessly, both financially and also making us work, and the building of the base of Mikdash, and everybody had a rota of working, a conscription to build the base of Mikdash. So the people turned to Rehavam, Shlomo's son, and said, please go easy on us. And Rehavam consulted his elderly advisors, the Zakenim, and they said, the people are right, you've got to listen to the people. They've lived through quite a hard period of time with Shlomo, a wonderful period of time in the building of the Beis Hamikdash, but it was financially very hard on them. And therefore, the time has come for you to give them a bit of a break and go easy on them. Then Rehavam consulted his young advisors, people with whom he had basically grown up, his own friends from childhood, and they said, no, you need to stamp your authority on the people and show them who's the boss. So, and Rehavam followed his young advisors and said, if you think my father was tough, I'm even tougher. And he said, I will deal with you much more harshly than my father ever did. And the people couldn't cope with that, and they basically walked away.
The king of Israel came
out. Exactly. That was the catalyst that brought Yerovam ben Nevat, who was a big Talmud Chacham, but he went bad. Later on he went bad.
He was his brother.
Whose brother?
The wheat king.
Rehavam's brother? Yeah. I don't think so. No, he was ben Nevat. He came from the child of Ephraim.
Oh, so he wasn't from Yehuda?
Not at all. He wasn't a royal lineage at all. The people basically brought him in. He had been in exile. It's like modern day, like a political leader falls out of favor and goes into exile, and then years later they bring him back. Yeah, it's the same thing. Yerovam ben Nevat had gone into exile because on one occasion he had insulted Shlomo HaMelech. I think I've got that right. And now the people brought him back. Yerovam ben Nevat, he was a big Talmud Chacham, you must realize that. But of course he went bad, and later on he ended up as Chotei or Machti, he introduced Avodah Zorah. He was rampant Avodah Zorah in the land. So, now at any rate, who was the mother of Rehavam was Na'amah HaAmonis, one of Shlomo HaMelech's foreign wives. They did all undergo Gerus, but it was considered far from ideal. And Rehavam is the son of Shlomo, and his mother is this Na'amah HaAmonis. So coming back to this piece of Medrash Rabbah, Amar Rav Tuvia bar Rav Tzadok, Shetei Metzias, two finds. And who are they? Rus HaMovia, the Na'amah HaAmonis. So the idea being that there must, I think I've got this right, the Mefarshim here on the Medrash Rabbah explain there must have been some goodness within the two daughters to have such illustrious descendants. David from Rus and from Moab, and Rehavam from Na'amah, who's from Ammon. Now the truth is, she was a Na'amah HaAmonis. She was from the people of Ammon. She was one of the many wives whom Shlomo converted and became.
So both of them were descended from Lot's daughters.
Absolutely. That's it. So, exactly. Well,
Ammon.
Yes, for sure. Na'amah came from Ammon, and Ammon was the son of Lot's daughter. Ammon, yeah, absolutely. That's where it comes from, yeah. And Rehavam, of course, on his mother's side, he's descended from Ammon, and on his father's side, Shlomo, coming from David, coming from Rus, coming from Moab, yeah? Descended from both sides. Yeah. Now, the Medrash goes on to quote a Pasuk, and the Pasuk is in Tehillim chapter Pei Tes, Pasuk Kaf Aleph. Let's get this Pasuk. Chapter Pei Tes. Yeah, Peites Kaf Aleph, where the Pasuk says, Motsasi David Avdi, I have found David my servant, B'shemen kochi meshachtiv, I anointed him with my holy oil. Now, there's the key word there is matzosi, where matzosi refers to David. Matzosi David avdi, I found David my servant, linking in to the shetiv and osecho hanimtzos, the two daughters who are found. And therefore, David, and it's an allusion, so that word hanimtzos is an allusion to David, who where we say matzosi David avdi, and of course coming from Rus. And the other one is a reference to Rechavam, who came from this Na'am Ha'amonis. So although Rechavam seems to have been weak, and according to some Midrashim, actually quite bad, and his mother Na'amah did convert to Yiddishkeit, but her roots are murky, coming from Ammon. But nevertheless, the Mefreshim say there must have been something good in these two daughters, even though they come out of the story quite badly, having had Beor with their father Lot, believing that the end of the world has come, and it was up to them to rescue the world's humanity and to bring back the world's population. Not realizing, of course, that Avram and others were elsewhere, but they thought the whole world had come to an end.
They knew that Avram was still alive.
Or they knew that.
Because Lot said to the angel, let me not go to him unless I die, because he couldn't compare to Avram. In Sodom, he was like a righteous man.
Yeah.
And with Avram, he would be like a Russia.
Oh. That's it. Yeah.
So they just couldn't go. I have the idea of joining with Avraham.
With Avraham, yeah.
Because they'd be like dead.
Right. Ah.
So that's what they knew. They couldn't join Avraham because their father said, "I would be like I die."
So they saw. They took it upon themselves to. They felt they had to rebuild the world's population.
To the father.
Terrible. Yeah. Oh. So at any rate, it seems there must have been something good about these two daughters, in that these two kings of Yehuda, David and then later Rechavam, coming David from Moab and Rechavam from Ammon, and it's on that basis that the Alshech is how the Alshech explains our pasuk. He says that David is thanking HaKadosh Baruch Hu for rescuing the two daughters of Lot from Sodom. So this Vayishlach Chitzah Vayfitzim Avrokim Rav Ayahumim is all about destruction of Sodom, and within that destruction there was the salvation for Lot and the two daughters from whom I, David HaMelech, am descended.
Where do we see that one of the great sages had harsh words about the daughters of Lot? And then he had a dream, and they came to him in the dream.
Who came in the dream?
The daughters of Lot came to him in the dream and justified what they did.
Oh, really?
And he said, if you had lived at the time, you would understand that they rebuked him, and he accepted the rebuke.
Yeah, I don't know.
I've read this somewhere. I don't know who it was, but I know that they appeared in his column, and they rebuked him. To show that their intentions were right. And perhaps they saw that David Melech would come from this, and they would see that, you know, that all this would happen. And they justified what they did.
Didn't know that, wow.
Mm. So I think the lesson from that is the Lashon Hara, and you're talking about people. Don't judge anybody until you stand in their place.
Yeah.